rough guys that were passing through the desert who had one goal in mind. They were going to pay for him. They paid 20 pieces of silver or something for him, and they were going to take him into Egypt, and they saw that he was a young, healthy lad of 17 years old, and they knew where they could get the most money out of a young, healthy lad in Egypt, and they take him in, and we wind up finding out as we read the scriptures that the guy that buys Joseph is a wealthy person, a person high up in the cabinet or the department heads of Pharaoh. It's a guy by the name of Potiphar. Potiphar, the Bible tells us, is a captain of the guard. He's a servant of Pharaoh, but a captain of the guard, what we would consider something like a police chief or a police captain. You know, this is the guard. This is not necessarily the military, but it's the guard of Pharaoh. So he's out of the house quite often, and he buys this young lad. He looks healthy enough, and he buys him, and he's going to be a servant to Potiphar. And the one thing that we know when we read the scriptures, it tells us that every time something happens to Joseph that's going to lead into a time of despair, such as this, when he is sold into Potiphar's house, the scriptures tell us, and the Lord was with Joseph. It's very important that the scriptures tell us that so that we don't forget, because we don't know what's about to happen to Joseph. Joseph is sold into Potiphar's house. We think, well, that's not a bad place to be a servant. He's pretty high up in the hierarchy of Pharaoh. And the Lord was with Joseph, which means no matter what's about to happen, God's not only going to bring him through it, but God is blessing him while he's there. And that's the key point. Wherever we find ourselves, God can still bless us, even if it's in a place where we didn't choose or we don't even want to be in. Joseph, a 17-year-old boy who's used to being under his father's arms, protected and not even getting into the manual labor that his brothers were doing on a daily basis, he was somewhat sheltered and protected, but now he is on his own in a strange land, in a strange house with a strange new master telling him what to do, but God was with him to the point where whatever God did with Joseph, Potiphar and people over him noticed something different about this young man. Because everything he did around the house prospered. We don't know what Potiphar made him do originally. Was he in charge of, the cooking, or was he in charge of waiting hand and foot on Potiphar or whoever? Whatever Joseph did, he did very well, and God was with him to the point where it prospered. And when it prospers, then the Potiphar sees that, hey, this is a guy that I need to use more often in a different capacity. And the Bible tells us that eventually Potiphar puts him over the household, over the servants that he has. Here's a slave brought in, and he's going to now elevate him to the head, the chief whatever, chief butler or whatever of the whole house, and he's in charge. Whatever he says goes in the house because Potiphar knows that he's gone a lot. I'm not here very often. But I can trust you. There's something about you that's trustworthy, and I can see that you have a good spirit about you. Potiphar is noticing something about this young man in his character, his integrity, his workmanship, his ethics, all that he is doing. Potiphar is noticing this and trusts him to be over the whole household of his servants. Now, we know the story. Joseph is probably feeling pretty good. He got out of the pit. He's in a strange land, he's in a strange house, but now, we don't know how many years it took, but now he has risen to a level where his word means something. He's actually being treated pretty well in Potiphar's house. He probably has his own room now, and he's able to do whatever he sees fit. But we know the story that Potiphar's wife, because Potiphar is gone quite often, Potiphar's wife makes a proposal to Joseph that he cannot do. He cannot sin against God nor his master Potiphar, and he denies her advances, and through her anger with him denying her, she gives a lie, produces a lie, that he has attempted to rape her. Now, this is Joseph, who has done everything that he could do to please his master, and now the wife of his master is claiming something that's very damaging. And we'll talk about this later on why this is so remarkable, is that, you know, Potiphar, when he gets back and the wife tells him, you won't believe what happened. How dare your servant do what he did to me? He tried to rape me. And Potiphar has no choice but to put Joseph in a prison. Put Joseph, the head guy in his house, put him in a prison. And when he does, it's interesting because the Bible tells us that it says, and Joseph's master, Potiphar, took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. So this is not your typical prison where you had a lot of outlaws and a lot of just roughhousers and things like this, where they would put them out in the fields and hard labor, that kind of thing. This was a different type of prison. This was a prison for the king's prisoners. And he was there in the prison, but verse 21 of chapter 39 says, but the Lord was with Joseph. There's it again. He was with him, and when he went to Potiphar's house, now the roller coaster's crashing down. He's now put in prison for something he did not do. Injustice has entered into his life. He's now put into a prison where he's never been. And the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So wherever Joseph goes, people notice something different about him. His character, his actions, his integrity, his word, his honesty. Whatever this may be, the Bible doesn't break down all the qualities that we see or that they saw in Joseph that we would love to know so that we could once again pray for God to give us these qualities as well. But they see that the Lord is with him and that he has shown favor. So much so that while he's in this horrible place, this prison, the keeper of the prison says, I can use a good man like this down here because I got all these other prisoners and I want somebody, somebody's got to lead them into their daily activities, whatever their daily activities would have been. Maybe they were making wheels for the chariots of the army or whatever. They had to do something for the king. So he's down there, the keeper of the prison, saying, I can use this Joseph guy to be the leader in here in the prison. So while he's in prison, he's put over the other prisoners, telling them their daily activities, teaching the new ones that come in, the ropes, here's where you go on this time, and here's where we eat, here's where, you know, he's in charge of the prison while he's there. Here again, he is not moping around and crying, even though I imagine he does think very much so that, how did I get into a place like this where I've done nothing wrong? I did nothing to deserve where I am and what's happening to me. And that's important for us to try to relate to Joseph. When we're going through something of none of our own doings, none of our fault, and we're finding ourselves, we just want to know that the Lord is with us. We want to read this story and realize, and the Lord was with Joseph, the Lord is with us as we're going through our time of injustice. Now, the interesting part about Joseph's time is he was 17 years old when he was sold into slavery. 11 years have passed. We don't know if all 11 years was in prison or how long he stayed in Potiphar's house. We assume that whatever time it was in Potiphar's house, he's been in prison for a good amount of time. You can imagine a long time for a 19 or 20-year-old guy now to sit there and suffer through. Every day I'm in prison. Every day I'm spending my prime years, my youth, here in prison. Now, his faith in God is growing. We don't get insight from the scriptures on how his relationship with God grows, but we know that there is something, we know that it's growing because God has given him a gift. We know that Joseph, from his youth, dreamed a lot. That's what got him out of favor with his brothers. Remember, he would go to his brothers, I had another dream last night that my corn came up and y'all's came up and bowed down to me. How about that? And they hated him for those. He was a dreamer, they called him. Now, it's interesting, back in those days, he didn't tell his brothers what these dreams meant. Did he not have the gift of interpretation of dreams back then? We don't know. He would just tell the dreams and allow them to consider what that may have meant. And, of course, they took it as it was that they were going to bow down to him, and they didn't like it. But we never get instruction that he was able to interpret his dreams as a youth. But somewhere between the time he was sold into slavery until the years that he is in prison, he has developed, through God, God has given him the ability to interpret dreams. Dreams are something that has attached itself to Joseph. Not only that he has them, but he can interpret them. And that's a gift from God, because God, throughout the scriptures, uses dreams to teach people, Remember Daniel? Daniel will come much later when Nebuchadnezzar had this dream of the statue and nobody could give an answer as to what the dream, how to interpret it. And Daniel was given that gift and he could interpret it. Well, way hundreds of years before Daniel, we get Joseph, who's got the same gift. I did a little research and found out that every one of us dream, and most likely every one of us dream every night. But we rarely remember these dreams. Only certain people have the awareness of their dreams to a very pinpoint detailed status. We dream every night, but most time when we awake, we either don't remember it at all, or there's bits and pieces of it, or we forget it as soon as we awake to a point where it doesn't bother us, doesn't interfere with us. Now, that's happened since man has been here, but something's going to happen to certain dreams that people can't just forget about. While Joseph's in prison, and we still haven't gotten to today's lesson, bear with me, while he's in prison, two other prisoners come to him, and these are high up in the Pharaoh's palace. This is his chief butler and his chief baker. They've disappointed, or as the Bible tells us, they had offended Pharaoh. His chief butler and his chief baker. We don't know what they did, but they did something to offend him where he threw them into the king's prison. Joseph welcomes them. Welcome to the king's prison. Here's your bunk. Here's what we do and all that. So he gets a relationship with these two guys. And they're not in there very long before he enters into their room one morning. They look troubled. Something as their countenance, their sadness, or something wrong. And Joseph asked them, what's this long face today? Why so sad today? And both of them have had a dream. And the dreams that they're having have bothered them. They remember it with vivid detail. It's not the dreams that we're having where we forget it or we don't remember just in parts of it. They know exactly what their dreams were, and it's bothered them. When you can remember a dream so much that it bothers your spirit, then you want to know what this means. And Joseph, who's got the gift of interpretation, here's what's your dream. What was your dream? And they tell Joseph the dream one-on-one, and he tells the butler first, well, your dream means that in 3 days, Pharaoh is going to he's going to lift up your head back to where it was to restore you to your head butlership. Good news for you. That's what your interpretation is. He says to the baker, well, in 3 days, Pharaoh is going to lift your head off your body, and they're going to hang you. He really offended Pharaoh. So the baker is going to die. The butler is going to return to where he was at the door of Pharaoh. And Joseph says something. Joseph has been in prison for what we are assuming at least 10 years now. And when Joseph gives the butler the interpretation, he says, but think on me when it shall be well with thee. When you get back to your position of honor and being able to speak directly to the Pharaoh, remember me and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. Get me out of here. You know me. I don't belong here. And then he says something interesting to the butler. For indeed, I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews. He hadn't forgot that in all these years. And here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. So we get an idea in hearing just what Joseph is telling the butler. He still remembers the injustice that he's gone through with his own brothers. I was stolen out of my homeland for nothing, for doing nothing. And all of these years, I hadn't forgot it. It's eaten at me. This is not where God wants me to be. I shouldn't be here. I should be in my homeland. I should be with my father and my brothers. He hadn't forgotten. It's eaten at him all these years to the point where he's saying, get me out of here, because he's hoping he can go back. He's wanting to go backwards. I've wasted all these years of my youth, but I'm going to start again. I want to try to get back to my homeland. And we know as we read the scriptures, we know that the butler gets back. He gets elevated back to his restoration. The Bible tells us he forgets him. He forgets Joseph. And 2 more years pass. Think of Joseph. He thought on that roller coaster ride, I've been 10 years in prison. I'm going back up. I finally met. God's really going to provide for me. He sent the butler in here, and I've been able to convince the butler he's going to remember and go and get me out of here. And 2 long years pass with nothing. Doesn't hear a thing. That would devastate me. 2 years is a long time when you're expecting that any day now they're going to open those doors and say, well, boy, we made a mistake. Come on up here. But 2 years, he stayed doing what he always did with high integrity, honesty, character. Wherever he was in the injustice that he was in, he kept living the life that God was pleased with, that other people noticed. I always admire and find uplifting to see those people that seemingly continually go through adversity more than me. Certain families seem to get attacked more than other families, and we see these people, and when they stay with God and keep on following and trusting in the Lord, even in the depths of their adversity, those of us who may not be going through the adversity at the time, we look at these lives and realize the special character of these individuals. They know in whom they trust, and they're willing to wait on God, even though they're going through a time that they don't understand. It's unjust, and it's something that they didn't deserve, but they are trusting and waiting on God. Waiting on God is a common thing that all Christians have to do. You have to learn when you are born again, Christianity can be a waiting, not I was going to say waiting game. There's no game to it, but it is a waiting process. Waiting on God to walk you through the channels that he has opened for you. Some of those waiting periods are longer than others, just as Joseph, his waiting periods are much longer than what he anticipated or needed to be. But he is having to wait 2 years. So here at 10:23 in the morning, I'm going to get to today's lesson, which we start here in the quarter. Here it says, and behold, there came up out of the river seven well-favored kine or cows, fat-fleshed, and they fed in a meadow. He's basically talking about Pharaoh has had a dream himself. And as I just said, we forget most of them, but Pharaoh, this dream, the Bible tells us, troubled his spirit. This worried him. He's going to see seven cows sitting, grazing on the side of the Nile River. And then out of the river come seven famished cows. And these famished cows are going to eat the fat cows. But they're not going to increase in their size. They're going to eat the fat cows and still stay thin and famished, like it didn't even impact them. And this troubles Pharaoh. He wakes up in the middle of the night, and then the next day or whatever, he either goes back to sleep and has a second dream. And this dream talks about a stalk of corn coming up, and it had 7 ears on it that was full and beautiful. And then another stalk came up and had seven thin ears of corn that ate up the fat ears of corn, but yet the thin ears were not impacted or advantaged. And this troubles him. So he goes to his magicians and interpreters and says, what does this mean? And they can't make heads or tails out of it. And as the butler is there listening and seeing the Pharaoh being so exasperated and worried, he goes, boom, I remember something. I remember the guy down in the prison. I want to read something that's not in the text. It says, and it came to pass in the morning that his spirit, the Pharaoh's spirit, was troubled, and he sent and called the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. Pharaoh told them his dream, that there were none, but there were none that could interpret it. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults of this day. Pharaoh was wroth with his servants and put me inward into the captain of the guard's house. You put me in prison, both me and the chief baker. And we dreamed a dream in one night, I and he, and we dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was there with us a young man, a Hebrew servant, in the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams. To each man according to his dream did he interpret it. And it came to pass as he had interpreted to us. So he's telling him about Joseph. So where we get to today's lesson, Pharaoh says, bring him up to me. They shave him, they clothe him, they bathe him, and he goes in front of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh's getting ready to tell him, Here's what I dreamed. And so when we pick it up in verse 2 and 3, it says, and behold, seven other kind came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other cows upon the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed did eat up the seven well-favored and fat cows. So Pharaoh awoke. And then verse 5 tells us he went back to sleep and dreamed the second dream. I'm going to jump ahead to verse 15. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it's not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. It shows a little bit of his integrity. This is his chance. I have been told that you can interpret dreams. This is Pharaoh. This is his ticket out. This is his ticket out of prison. I've been told that you have this ability. And what does Joseph, this is our first indication of the type of integrity he has. Joseph says, it's not me, it's God. It's God that has the ability, and he's using me as a vessel. And God, I'll listen to your dream, and I'll give you the interpretation that God gives me. It'll be through him, and God will give you an answer. And Joseph said, and I don't want to miss what I want to read, but and Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. He says you have two dreams, but both of them mean the same thing. The reason you had two dreams is because it's coming from God. This is given an exclamation point to it. Whenever you have two of the same different dreams but mean the same thing, it's from God, and he's letting you know it's coming from him and that he's bringing this to pass. Well, what does it mean? It says the seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears of corn are 7 years. The dream is one. But the seven thin and ill-favored cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty ears of corn blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. I'm going to read this. It's not in your lesson text. Behold, there will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. And there shall rise after them 7 years of famine. And all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land, and the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. That's why the cows didn't get fat when they ate the other cows. You're not even going to remember the 7 years of plenty. It's going to be such a horrible famine, you're not even going to be able to remember the good days. For that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will bring it to pass shortly. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Now, this is an interesting part of Joseph. Joseph was just asked to give the interpretation. Tell me what my dream means. This is King Pharaoh. Tell me what the dream means. And Joseph gives him the interpretation of the dream. But now Joseph is going to do something he's not asked for. He's going to tell him how to fix it. Now think about that. It's not arrogance. It's knowledge and wisdom. And the integrity of the man. He's telling him not only the problem you're going to face, but here's what you need to do. Now therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land. I want you to break up your ministry, and I want you to do this, this, and that, and take up the fifth part, 20% of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years. All the crops that you're going to bring in, I want you to preserve 20% of it for these 7 years of famine. And let them gather all the food of those good years that come and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. Joseph is not only saying what a lot of people, they're going to say Joseph was a wise and knowledgeable person. Well, most people would say, all right, if I got seven good years and seven bad years, you better store up some extras, what you better do. And now that's not a lot of wisdom and knowledge just to say, well, you better store up some of your good years for the rainy days when the famine's coming. But Joseph goes much more detail. He tells him how to break up how to assign different officers over certain sections of the country, how much to preserve, where to keep it in store, how to preserve it, all these things. And you're sitting here thinking, what in the world? Even to the point where in verse 39, Pharaoh says unto Joseph, for as much as God has shown thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as you are. You're telling me to appoint someone over Egypt that's got all this wisdom and discretion. No one have I found that knows more than you. He's about to appoint him this. Where did God teach Joseph all of this? It goes back to the part we had to go back to Potiphar. When Joseph was accused of rape, what he didn't do, Potiphar had to do something and put him in prison. And he put him in the prison where it says, he put him into the place where the king's prisoners were bound. Not the hard labor prison camp on the outside of town. This is where the king's prisoners are. Now, who are the king's prisoners? They might be workers of the Department of Agriculture in there. There might be workers of the Department of Commerce in there. There might be people from the Department of Transportation. This is all of Pharaoh's land. Joseph is in prison for what may be 10 to 12 years, learning everything about Egypt. He's going through the hardest time of his life, laying his head down at night thinking, why am I here? Why is God doing this to me? Why is God allowing me to go through prison when I didn't deserve this? This is not fair that I'm having to spend my youth here. But in the daytime, he's directing people that worked in all different departments and ministries of Pharaoh's land. And he's learning. By the time he gets in front of Pharaoh, he knows more about the production and where the fields are, how much is produced, how much they can produce more, where they can store it. He knows more than Pharaoh knows. Because he trusted God, and he did while he was in his mess, while he was in the worst time of his life, he continued to follow God and learn and allow God to, wherever he was placed, use it. Learn where you are. Gain and build your knowledge where you are, because God will use it at a different time. You will remember what you've learned in your deepest, darkest times. You will use it in times when it's needed in the future. Joseph, who Pharaoh thinks is the wisest guy he's ever met, and yes, God gave him that ability, but God used prison to educate Joseph because of what he needed Joseph to do in the rest of his life over the land of Egypt. That fascinated me, because here he goes to Potiphar's house and is placed over the whole servants of Potiphar's house, so he's learning how to deal with people. Remember how he was just an arrogant, kind of a little arrogant kid? His brothers hated him because all he did was brag. Now he's over the house of Potiphar and he's learned how to deal with people. He's learning how to manage people. He's learning in his despair in times. Then he goes to prison and he learns something that he would have never learned on his own. And now it is all coming back to him to where he's where God wants him to be used in a way that he should be. Verse 40, 41, 42, and 43. Pharaoh, thou shalt be over my house, and according unto your word, whatever you say, shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. That's quite a promotion from the prison. I'm going to put you over the whole land, over all my departments. You're going to be my chief of staff. Whatever you say is going to happen, and I'm going to be the only one over you. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. He went from rags and ball and chains to fine linen and a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot, which he had, and they cried before him, bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. Now, I want to finish this with something else. Not only did he put him in the chariot, but he changed his name in verse 45. He says, and Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paniah and gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, who doesn't matter who he is. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt, and Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Now, the thing is, you continue to read this, it says, and Joseph, and unto Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came. During the 7 years of plenty where he is ruling and reigning, he has two children by this Egyptian wife that Pharaoh has given him, making him a full citizen of Egypt. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. For it says, for God, saith he, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. He's naming his firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me forget all that I've gone through. I now see why God allowed me to do all this. I've reached a point where I now understand the years, the 13 years of horror that I went through has led me to here, and I now forget all the toil and all the suffering that I had to go through all the way back to being stolen out of my father's hand. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. God has taken me in the place that I was afflicted and has made me fruitful, made me prosperous in the place where I thought was the darkest place that I could be. He has allowed me to be fruitful in that. It's fascinating to me as I close this lesson that God gave him two sons. As I studied this lesson, I found out from Potiphar's, it was very rare for a member like Potiphar not to castrate his servants. They would typically make eunuchs of their servants, especially if they were over the household. He did not castrate Joseph, which was a common practice. That's why Potiphar's wife could do what she wanted to do, because he was the one that wasn't castrated, and therefore it could have possibly been true, and they put him in. Potiphar had no other choice but to put him in prison. He goes to prison, he's elevated to Pharaoh. Well, Pharaoh does the same thing. He typically will castrate his servants to the point where things can't happen in the household, and he doesn't. Instead, because he wants to elevate him so high above a servant head, but to a ministry head, he says, I'm not only not going to castrate you, but I'm going to give you a wife. And out of that union came Manasseh and Ephraim, half Egyptian, half Hebrew. And as we mentioned last week, when Jacob is going to bless his 12 sons, and then the sons are going to get a part of their land, Reuben, the eldest, who sinned against his father, remember what we told last week, where he laid with his father's concubine, he will not get land. It will not be divided into Reuben, but instead, Manasseh and Ephraim will receive a land grant in what we know as Israel. They will receive the largest portion of the land themselves, born in Egypt, but in honor of their father Joseph. Joseph was mistreated. He was done unjustly. He spent his whole life in Egypt, but yet God has never left him. And God's reward is not only the current and the present blessing Joseph in the state that he's in now, but now his posterity, his descendants, because he made a promise to Abraham that your seed will be blessed and the nations of the earth will be blessed by your seed. Well, that's a promise right there. And by Joseph doing what he did, other nations came to Egypt. We need food. And there's Joseph, a Hebrew, God's man, giving out the food, blessing other nations because he is the seed of Abraham. And as Joseph dies, his children will inherit a greater portion of Israel, and they will go down as some of the 12 sons of Jacob. Good stuff. This lesson today is what makes us so attentive and attracted to Joseph, a man who had every right to not trust God, to be in despair, to mope around, to say, woe is me, everything is wrong because I've been unjustly treated, and yet he walked with God, God was with him, and everyone that met him knew something was different about this young man. And God elevated him to a point where he needed him to be, and when he got there, he could look back at all the despairing years and say, now I know. God was with me, and he brought me. I had to learn all of that in prison so that I could execute it as Pharaoh's second in command. Good stuff. Next week, we're going to close down the life of Joseph as his father and brothers are some of those who have to come and ask for grain, and they're going to meet him. So we'll see you then.